Final hour. It's upon us. Welcome in to 104.5 The Zone. Buck Rising here with you till 1 o'clock. Lucas Panzeca making it all happen, making sure the show stays on the rails. Mike Golic Jr. of ESPN is going to be here in just about 15 minutes from now. We'll talk about the world of college football, given that Mike was on the call of the Vols game a couple of weeks ago and that they have a big game coming up in Tuscaloosa on Friday. You guys want to get involved, we welcome your participation. 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. With the trade deadline a little less than 2 weeks away, what acquisitions or what moves, if not acquisitions, do you want the Titans to make? Understanding what the nature of the secondary is right now, your offensive line depth taking a hit with Tyson Brilo retiring, but I thought Kendall Lamb played pretty well, against the Buffalo Bills. Ryan Tannehill not getting sacked for the first time in a game all season on Monday night. So where would you tinker, if you were John Robinson in his front office, where would you tinker with this roster at this point? Because ESPN has a trade deadline article up about rumors, news, deals, and reactions, basically, for what is happening in the NFL right now. And they asked each of their NFL Nation reporters what move makes the most sense for the team that they cover ahead of the deadline. Now, for the Titans, Teron Davenport, our buddy over at ESPN.com, wrote down that Josh Reynolds would be the player that most makes sense to move because of the depth that they currently have on the roster, because it seems like Julio Jones and A.J. Brown are both trending in the right direction, and because Josh Reynolds has been a healthy scratch several weeks at this point. Now, it doesn't mean that he doesn't benefit you to have on the roster, and maybe you don't think that's a luxury that they can afford to give away, but it comes at a time when the Titans desperately need help in their secondary. Now, they made some moves. Greg Maben is now on the active roster. They signed him from the Cardinals practice squad. I imagine we will see a practice squad call-up for the Titans as well as we get closer to game time against Kansas City. But do you believe that to be enough? Because what is also listed here is the ESPN article, or the ESPN Broncos reporter, Jeff Legwald, saying that Kyle Fuller makes the most sense, the former Bears corner, who went to play for Vic Fangio and was a little bit of an apple of Titans fans' eye there for a while. Kyle Fuller may be available to acquire. What are you willing to give up to go get Kyle Fuller becomes a different conversation. And do you care at all if John Robinson is burning draft picks to make the 2021 team better? Because this is supposed to be your year, after all. 615-737-1045 is how you jump in. For me, I've been trying to find out, because they are exploring options, the Titans, but how close they are to acquiring a corner or a member of the secondary to help boost their room, I don't think it's as close as people would want it to be. And the movement on Josh Reynolds, if there is any, would require somebody to be interested in Josh Reynolds. And if I'm a team that's looking at what he has been dealing with, going on the record about dealing with Achilles issues, coming off of a shoulder surgery, now a healthy scratch for a team that could and did need his help against the Jets when they had nobody else. But outside of that, he's not been a factor. Doesn't have great value on special teams. Am I willing to give something up to get Josh Reynolds? Would there be any interest in him at all? I'm sure he wants a better opportunity. This is supposed to be a prove-it year for him. This was supposed to be the better opportunity for Josh Reynolds. Hadn't materialized that way. So we'll continue to monitor that, and if I, as information becomes available, we'll keep you updated on it at this point. You also have to remember that you don't have a second-round pick to factor into this equation as well, because you gave up that for Julio Jones. 615-737-1045. Let's go to John in Sumner County who wants to chime in. What's up, John?
Yeah, hey. So I was just looking at Derrick Henry. So I remember hearing all these things about, you know, guys like Jim Brown and O.J. Simpson saying they just had bodies that were godsends and they never worked out. I consider Derrick Henry the same as them, except in the workout era. What do you think?
I don't have the context of what the only thing I've seen from OJ is what highlights they showed during the 6-part ESPN make. Was it Making a Murderer, OJ Simpson? No, that was the Fox thing, wasn't it? So my knowledge of OJ Simpson only goes back to the 30 for 30. Didn't ESPN win an Oscar for that?
It was excellent.
It was so good.
Yeah, I remember binging that.
So I have no idea about. I can't. I would be lying to you if I tried to.
Yeah, our generation knows OJ for different reasons. But he was a phenomenal football player.
Sure, I'll take your word for it. But I mean, in those highlights that they show during the documentary, you see the things that people are talking about, right? Just Derrick Henry, the way that he pulls away from people at that size. You see the same kind of, I mean, just OJ Simpson in those highlights is playing a different sport than the other guys who are on the field in the, was that the 70s?
And I think that's what Jim Brown was. Like, how can he be that big and that fast at the same time?
Yeah, so both of those guys predate us as a show, and I would imagine the vast majority of people at this point. But Derrick Henry is playing a different sport. But how can they maximize what Derrick Henry is doing, right, with the trade deadline upcoming? Can they find ways to make this worth Derrick Henry's while? If you're going to squeeze all of this out of him this year with no future certainty that it is repeatable, other than the fact that he's doing incredible things coming off a year where most guys don't after rushing for 2,000 yards. How can you maximize the opportunity of the current roster at the trade deadline? Can you? Is it worth it? 615-737-1045.
Bill Barnwell of ESPN and John Miller's tweeting us about this right now. On ESPN Plus, put out a bunch of proposals across the league. He has the Titans going for Xavien Howard of the Dolphins for a 2022 first-round pick and a 2023 second-round pick.
Yeah, somebody just DM'd me. Chris Campbell just DM'd that to me on Instagram as well. Saying, I say we throw whatever we can at Xavien Howard. The Dolphins defense started out the year well, and since then it looks like those guys are probably going to break up. What I'll say to you about it is that Xavien Howard and Kyle Fuller, if those are indeed legitimate targets for the Titans, and I don't know how legitimate they are, I know that they're exploring possibilities, as every NFL team explores possibilities with the deadline looming, I would say to you at this point, I don't know that you need to outright mortgage your future for what Xavien Howard would cost. Now, Kyle Fuller is going to come at some expense as well, but it's not. And listen, they made this a possibility when they restructured Julio Jones's deal. It's not just exclusively about rolling money over to future seasons and trying to make your finances make sense next year when Tannehill's cap hit goes through the roof and Taylor Lewan's cap hit goes up in number as well. You're going to need some financial flexibility, but also it allows for you to have some breathing room right now. Xavien Howard is coming off a deal. Who's the other corner opposite Xavien Howard who just basically held out of Dolphins camp because he was the best player or the best corner on his roster, but not being paid like one? And in fact, that ended up working out in his favor not for the Dolphins at this point at 1-5, but Xavien Howard, I can't remember the name of the corner, Lucas, or if you could pull that up for me. Who has been pretty good for the Dolphins and better than Xavien Howard, but his name escapes me at this particular moment. Was it Xavien Howard that held out for the contract?
Because I think that's who you're thinking of.
Jay, yeah. On YouTube, was it Xavien Howard that held out for the contract?
Yeah, and he still had a bunch of years left on his contract.
That's right, because Byron Jones is the one who got paid, and yeah, Xavien Howard right. Was like, no.
Howard held out with like 3 or 4 years still left on his deal.
That's very interesting. Okay. 615-737-1045. Steve is on Briley Parkway. I love when people tell me where they're driving on. Steve wants to weigh in. What's up, Steve?
Yeah, there's a certain jackrabbit on the defensive side of the ball that misses a whole lot of coverages, and I don't think he's earning his money. What do you guys think?
Well, I would say that whether he's earned it to this point or not, he's the best thing you got right now. Look at what the Titans are dealing with in the secondary.
Yeah, long as Fulton's on IR.
Jackrabbit has underwhelmed. There's no question about it. I think that his best game so far was probably Jacksonville. And I saw a lot of people making jokes at his expense on Monday night because the best defense that he played was causing Breon Borders to drop that interception. But you can't afford to not have Jackrabbit on your roster. You literally have almost no other corners left.
Did have the PBU on that play.
Oh, what, on the interception? Oh, he got the credit? It's pretty good. When we come back, we'll take some more of your phone calls. Mike Golic Jr. will join us as well. We'll pivot to a little bit of college football. We'll ask Mike. He played offensive line, obviously, at Notre Dame. And we will ask him what it would be like to block for somebody like Derrick Henry, if such a thing even exists. And also, if you're caller number 5 right now, why don't we give the audience something? Why don't we give you something to stick around? If you're caller number 5 right now, we'll give you a pair of Titans tickets to go and see the Titans versus the Chiefs on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. You have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see your Titans face off against their remaining 2021 home opponents at Nissan Stadium, thanks to Kentucky legend. Be caller number 5 right now for a chance to win Titans versus Chiefs tickets, 615-737-1045. For more info on Titans Ticket Tuesday, presented by Kentucky legend, visit 1045thezone.com. Mike Golic Jr. is going to join us here in just a second, famously of ESPN. We'll talk about some college football here in just a second with Mike. He was on the Vols call a couple of weeks ago, and we'll have Miami and North Carolina State this weekend. I'll be curious to get his thoughts on what the hell is happening with the U right now. But where I want to kind of go first with Golic Jr. when he hops on is I'm curious to see from Mike's perspective how much different the conversation around Derrick Henry for MVP has been since Monday Night Football. Because the support for him publicly by high-profile people at the worldwide leader in sports, and not just on the worldwide leader in sports at ESPN, but across the sports media spectrum, it feels like it's as overwhelming this year or this week as it was at any point last season while he was putting together a 2,000 rushing yard campaign. So why don't we ask Mike Golic Jr., who joins us now, ESPN, of course. You can hear Canty and Golic later this afternoon as well. Boss man, how we living?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I am doing well. We're just still riding high on Derrick Henry's performance on Monday Night Football. The Titans fans are very much enjoying the attention that they're getting from the rest of the country. I want to start there, Mike, because the overwhelming support for Derrick as an MVP candidate, and I understand that we're just in week 7, but it seems to have totally taken a different kind of tenor on after Monday Night Football, just because people saw him do it in a nationally televised game. Have you guys felt that at the network and just seeing the overwhelming support from people across the country watching football as opposed to just us here in Tennessee?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's how we make all our decisions. Like, if you do it in a primetime game, you know it counts for double, maybe even triple in some instances. Like, that's how this has always worked. I will say Derrick Henry also, I saw he just showed up to their presser today wearing a shirt with, I believe, a dog named Bammed on it from a local shelter who's trying to get adopted. So if you want to win, this is said true with advertising too, just put dogs in your ads. And everything Derrick Henry does right now is in some way, shape, or form an ad for his MVP candidacy. So that's a great note. But what the national games also do is, if we haven't necessarily been paying as much attention as we should to Derrick Henry, and part of that is, you know, the Titans season at this point, the division they play in, being largely trash, like, now we pop open the hood and look underneath every once in a while. And I was watching NFL Live yesterday and heard Laura Rutledge say that Derrick Henry is averaging over 120 yards a game.
Oh my God, I saw that
like
too.
Last 35 games.
Oh, I fell out of my chair.
I couldn't believe it. And so the primetime games do serve that good of, all right, when they're spaced out accordingly, we go back and finally do the legwork on a team like Tennessee who still has plenty to play for. They play in a very bad division, so we expect them to win this thing, even as the Colts and them start to look a little more confident with Carson Wentz. But now we notice this and we get to stop and appreciate it, because it really is unprecedented. A back with the kind of wear and tear that he has racked up already in his NFL career should not be able to exist at this size or any size, but here he is.
At Mike Golic Jr. is where you can follow him, of course, and see him across all of the ESPN platforms. He's on the NC State-Miami game this weekend as well. Mike, as somebody who, of course, played the offensive line position at Notre Dame, as somebody who has a unique appreciation for what goes down in the trenches, how has this kind of hit you, what Derek is doing? Because I looked at Mina Kimes' Twitter feed yesterday, and she's just out here saying somebody like Derrick Henry shouldn't exist in today's game, and yet here he is, bigger, faster, stronger than a sport filled with giant, fast, strong, angry people. Does this kind of, I don't want to say change the way that people are evaluating football, because he seems to be one of one, but do you see that renewed appreciation for the running game because of Derrick?
Well, I think we also have to recognize, you're right, he is one of one. And I heard Marcus Spears on NFL Live yesterday. God, I am like a walking billboard for this show, but I love all the people involved, so it is what it is. He goes, Derrick Henry made me realize I got too cute. I looked at modern football, and it made me forget what this was really about. Someone being able to put up the kind of production that Derrick Henry is at that position, like if it doesn't look the way that we've deemed modern running backs are supposed to look with all the receiving and all that stuff, then we somehow discount it. Derrick Henry is a one of one. I covered Derrick Henry's Heisman Trophy year at that ceremony. I got to interview him for ESPN Radio after he won, and I stared eye to eye with him. That should not happen. I should not stare eye to eye with a human being that I'm supposed to be blocking for, let alone then watch him run away from guys the way he has consistently since he got into the NFL. And so, yeah, I think it's renewed focus in a different way. Like, Tennessee can be a little more old school with their ground attack. The last time we saw something like this was the Vikings vintage Adrian Peterson coming off a knee injury. This is something akin to that. This is something very few, if any, other people will be able to do, so we properly need to appreciate it.
There's a video clip going around, Mike, of Henry dapping up Jeff Simmons after that goal line stop on Monday Night Football. And they're the same damn size. Jeffrey Simmons is 6'4", 300 pounds. Derek's probably 250, but still 6'4". It looked like King Kong and Godzilla dapping up.
It is truly terrifying. And we had this argument the other day, and shame on me for not positing his name sooner. If you had to, and this is going around Twitter, create a football team entirely comprised of one player for all 11 spots on both sides of the ball, who would you pick? Aaron Donald obviously got thrown out there. I thought George Kittle was a compelling answer. And someone posed Derrick Henry, and I realized that's probably on the medal stand here. He is that terrifying.
It's been really, really fun to watch his career so far throughout the course of his time here in Tennessee. Mike Golic Jr., our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. You can catch him later this afternoon on Canty and Golic, 2 to 6 Central Time. And, of course, you could see him all over ESPN. So, Golic, I want to kind of look at the world of college football right now, because I know – that you were on the call of Tennessee a couple of weeks ago with your guys' crew. The game against Ole Miss was, of course, a talking point nationally. A lot of national attention for the state of Tennessee this week, some good, some bad. What have you made of the progression of Tennessee under Josh Heupel? And particularly, what have you seen from this defense under Tim Banks? Because I think that's been the most surprising thing of all of it for us here locally.
Yeah, I think just that, the way it's been able to come together as quickly as it has, because you mentioned Tim Banks' outfit when we had our meetings with him and talked to him about this. One of the questions we asked was, do you have to coach defense differently opposite an offense that wants to go at the speed that Josh's does? And they gave all the right answers, that you don't, you know, we're going to go out here and do what we do type thing, even for a defense that, hell, when we have him, was missing a major starter at every level and still managed to go out and have a dominant performance against South Carolina. I do think there is some ability that they have displayed, though, to withstand sudden change, because that's what you've got to do if your offense goes three and out quicker than expected, if they turn the ball over the way they had earlier in the season. And I think they deserve a ton of credit for that. The offense is going to get the billing, but Tim Banks' outfit has the unenviable task of being the dance partner with a group that, yes, when it's humming, like we've seen it hum some point this season, especially since Hendon Hooker took over, that's a different breed what you can do, and it helps mitigate some of the areas this team is still going to have to improve personnel-wise. But defensively, off on the side of that here, that's a tough task, and they've made it look good so far.
Unclear whether Hendon Hooker will play at Alabama this weekend. God knows they could use him, and it may not make a difference either way. But Joe Milton, to end that game running out of bounds as time expired, ooh, is not the kind of look. I mean, wait, I don't want to bury him, right? Like, I don't want to bury him, Mike. But I just, the way that game ended like that, everybody in Knoxville, in Middle Tennessee, in East Tennessee, in West Tennessee, just dropped their head into their hands and said, "What the hell is this?"
Yeah, it was a tough look, and you feel for Joe. Like, I understand why he got to start the season. Just an unbelievable collection of gifts and talent, but that lack of awareness there, in addition to some of the deep ball woes, is why you had to make the change here. And I applaud Joe for being ready at the end of what was a chaotic finish to that game, staying dialed in on the sideline, but clearly not enough in that moment there. Certainly one he's going to want to have back, but again, so much happened over the course of that game. It's one play, it's magnified because it's at the end, but we certainly won't bury the kid.
So they're at Alabama, at Kentucky, and hosting Georgia in their next three. It's going to be difficult for the University of Tennessee to kind of keep their head above water, no matter who the quarterback is. What Alabama did against Mississippi State was about the most predictable thing in the world for a Nick Saban team coming off a loss. But I want to kind of talk about what they are doing defensively, Mike, because I don't know whether Josh Heupel's offense, regardless of the quarterback situation, is going to be able to exploit them the way that we might have thought a couple of weeks ago. But what is different about this Alabama defense this season, and how are they trying to make up for some of the issues that they've had?
Well, I think one thing, I would push back on the notion that whichever quarterback wasn't going to have issues here. The game changes a lot with Hendon Hooker under center or not. Like, what he's been able to do for the deep passing game, I think on the season, when I got to them against South Carolina, they had something like 7 plays of over 40 yards, and Hendon Hooker had accounted through the air for 4 of them. Like, since he came into the game, that deep passing element off of what Josh wants to do, low and slow near the line of scrimmage, all those wide receiver screens, is you got to be able to hit on some of those deep passes so every defensive back can't come up and play as aggressive as Alabama's going to in this game. And Joe Milton has not displayed an aptitude for that so far. That was the issue with him. We saw it really highlighted against Pitt when he struggled and was airmailing a lot of those deep throws. And so if you take that away, Alabama doesn't need an excuse to come up and play you tough. Like, with Battle and the rest of that secondary that looked like they had received the butt-chewing that Nick Saban laid out to them after Texas A&M, well, this last week against the Mississippi State offense that is very different, but the offense that's not all that different is Ole Miss. And the thing that thwarts a lot of these tempo attacks is exactly what Alabama, what Georgia, and these high-end SEC machines are built to do, which is, hey, we only got to put 4 or 5 guys near the line of scrimmage because we got 5 stars across the board who can handle their business. And then we are going to get up, we are going to play aggressive, and we are going to tackle you near the line of scrimmage. We're not going to let you hit these bubble screens to Velus Jones underneath and gain 10 yards because we're playing in a cushion. We're going to get up in your face. We're going to make life hard for you. And when they can control the box along with that, that's the recipe to undo everything that tempo is supposed to kind of make easier on an offense that talent-wise isn't at the same place yet that Alabama, Georgia, et cetera, are.
My producer, Luke, has just whispered into my ear, "and fake injuries" in the middle of your analysis there. You're the worst. This is just a bitter, miserable Tennessee fan the week after losing to Lane Kiffin. Get yourself together back there.
Hey, I love Lane Kiffin. I mean, nothing about that.
All right, very good. Mike Golic Jr. here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Is there a player, is there a starter on the Georgia defense, Mike, that you wouldn't draft?
No.
Yeah.
I want all of them. They are Jordan Davis. I saw him in the game they played. I want to say it was against Arkansas. That was one of the big games that week. I forget if game day was there or not, but I remember just seeing them run onto the field. And Jordan Davis, who is the biggest scary man in the middle of a defense full of big scary men, ran out there wearing one of those like 60-pound weight room chains that you put on the end of a barbell. And he just wore it like a necklace, and it looked comfortable for him. He didn't look like he was really struggling under the weight of that thing. And when you look at the tone that he sets, you know, N'Kobe Bean, the middle of that defense, I've said to everyone, Georgia's not playing against anyone that's on the field. They're playing against an invisible standard that they hold up inside that meeting room. Where if you see someone gain 3 yards on that team, they're getting up MFing each other, cussing out because their standard, no one should gain an inch on that defense. That's what made what Kentucky did last week was amazing. Scoring points in the second quarter, no one had done so far this season. Scoring multiple touchdowns against that defense, they deserve a medal for that, because that is the biggest, meanest group of the most disciplined players in college football right now. We're going to throw around all-time terms for this defense, and deservedly so, because they are playing a standard that very few of us will get to see before or after this, and it's special.
Mike Golic Jr. of ESPN, our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. Of course, you can see him on the call for the NC State Wolfpack at the Miami Hurricanes on ESPN2 Saturday night. How long did you know that Boone Goes the Dynamite was going to be Twitter gold, and why are you so much better at this than the rest of us?
I'm not going to lie to you. I that was one of those, and everyone out there, if you're not already doing this, try out your tweets in the group chat before you send them. Like, see how it goes over with some of your friends. Does it get a double tap? Does it just get the little, like, hard impression thing? Or do people actually textually respond to you in that situation? I trotted that one out. It did numbers in the group chat, and so I let it fly there and felt really good about it, as should everyone who is an App State fan, because I thought they were coming close to talking about this Miami team I'm getting ready to face. I thought App State earlier this season had a very legit chance to beat Miami going in. They almost pulled that off, and I understand they have a couple of suspect losses this season, but we saw, man, when Chase Bryce and that downfield passing attack got going, boy, oh, boy, did the mullet-wearing folks at Coastal get a different second half than they bargained for.
It was an incredible game to watch amongst a lot of fun sporting events that took place last night. You can hear more of Mike Golic Jr. this afternoon on Canty and Golic. Mike, we appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the football over the weekend, and we'll catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Mike Golic Jr., ESPN, kind enough to drop by the show. The world of college football is getting messy in a fun way, right? We're creeping closer towards the playoffs, and when the Vols go on their bye week next week, we'll do more of a state of the program. I know it's not quite the halfway point of their season next week, but given that they'll be off, I think we'd need to like take a 1,000-foot view at what Tennessee is right now and how much, depending on how you feel about it, how much you think they've exceeded your expectations, whether they're right on pace for where you thought they would be under Josh Heupel, and whether you think, I don't know how you could think they've underwhelmed, but maybe there are some people out there who expect them to be better than they are at this point. But when you look at the college football playoff, Georgia 1, Cincinnati 2, Oklahoma 3, Bama 4, Ohio State is sitting on the edge there. I had no idea Michigan was undefeated. I just found that out the other day.
So is Michigan State.
No, I know. But Michigan State, I think is just a tad more, like, I think Mel Tucker's done a great job there, but I think they're a tad more fraudulent as a top 10 team than Michigan might be. But I was shocked to find out that Michigan was flat out undefeated.
Which is hilarious, because when Iowa loses, or when Penn State lost their first game, it was kind of, and then when Ohio State lost to Oregon, it's like, all right, well, that's it. No one in the Big Ten going to the playoff, right?
We buried
everybody in the Big Ten, and Michigan's over here like, hey, we've got all these national championships. We're undefeated. It's like, just be quiet, Michigan.
They're a spot. Well, no, it's not be quiet, Michigan. It's be quiet, Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
We're tired of you. We're tired of you and your khaki pants. Get the hell out of here.
They haven't been mentioned once in the playoff conversation.
Haven't lost a game. They're behind Ohio State in the AP top 25 poll, and Ohio State's got a loss on the year.
Because they're going to lose to Ohio State.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, guaranteed.
So we're just dismissing Michigan outright. You can't do it until we see you do it. And even then, I'm not going to think that Michigan can do it. Poor Jim Harbaugh. It's the end of the show. What the hell? Polls next. So what did you do on my Twitter account that you had to delete? Because we'll do the polls here in a second. We've been on, we were talking about this during the commercial break, not to, you know, jinx us, but we've been on like a 2-week heater as a show. I think we've kicked ass. And for some reason, the person who has been consistently there day in and day out to give us a grade at the end of the show, Spencer, he has somehow evaporated from the Zone TV chat. I haven't seen him since we started this hot streak.
APB out for Spencer.
And obviously we hope he's okay. And it would be terrible for me to be like, I only care about him if he comes back and gives us a good grade. But also, get the hell back here and give us our flowers.
He's an Ole Miss fan too, so I'm surprised he didn't want to be a part of these conversations.
I think he was at the start of the week. I think there was some crow Actually, no. Spencer has been absent for the proceedings for a while, so I hope he's okay. Let me suss this out, because I was getting ready to leave for work. Lucas and I had concluded our pre-show call. I open up my mentions, and there's just a million responses of, who wants to tell him? Trade for? ? What did you do for my Twitter account this morning while I was in the shower getting ready for work? What did you do?
One of the polls was, would you trade Josh Reynolds? And I typed, would you trade for Josh Reynolds?
Oh. What? So. Yeah.
I accidentally typed, would you trade for Josh Reynolds, and then quickly deleted it.
And that was what people were so quick to bury for?
Freaking out about, yeah.
Do you understand what flooded my mentions because of one word? One simple,
three letters.
One additional four? Why? Did you do it on purpose?
No, I didn't. It was just me, bleary-eyed in the morning, taking out the polls.
So maybe we need to start doing the polls from your Twitter account, because you need to have some consequences associated with these issues that you have. I don't want to have zero repercussions, because there's no way for you to learn not to make these mistakes if I'm the one dealing with them.
I have about as much accountability as SEC officials when it comes to the polls.
With that, let's do the polls.
All right, Dan. I reckon I'll talk about a poll update. This is Carl Childers. There's a young feller. I think he's got the final numbers. Here's the producer of the Buck Rising show. A feller named Lucas Panzeker. Got any mustard and biscuits?
You did that same thing yesterday.
I don't think we did.
What's wrong with you? What is happening?
Do you trust the Braves to win the series? 62% say yes.
Find out tonight against the Dodgers. Game 5 in Los Angeles. Can the Braves get to the World Series tonight?
They're playing out of their minds.
I mean, Rosario was a revelation. He has been red hot throughout the course of this championship series. I don't want to give opinions on baseball and act like I've been following it all season long, because it's simply not true. I know that the Dodgers are the defending World Series champions. I know that the Braves should not have made it this far after losing Acuña earlier in the season. And I love the fact that they went in at the trade deadline instead of selling out, because I think that gave their fans a little bit of extra pride with the team that they have in front of them right now. But they can prove a lot to Braves fans, and really to the rest of Major League Baseball, if they can close out the Dodgers tonight, especially with the specter of last year hanging over them.
Yeah, they were at kind of a crossroads when Acuña went down. I remember having that conversation with Will Bowling. Do you tear it all down or go for it? And they went for it, and they're getting hot at the right time. 3-1. What could possibly go wrong? Why is the Dolphins' interest in Deshaun Watson coming up now? They lost to the Jags. They're averaging 4.7 yards per play, or wins over morals. 59% say it's wins over morals.
It's incorrect. They lost to the Jags.
That's 28%.
In London. Well, 28% of the people are actually looking at this from the most logical way. The owner's probably pissed. They lost to the Jacksonville Jags. Everybody in Miami's having a meltdown the same way the Titans fans did after losing to the winless at the time New York Jets. Since then, winless as well, the New York Jets.
Where's the Vols program halfway through the season? Ahead of schedule, right on schedule, or behind schedule? 61% say they're ahead. 33% say they're right on track. 6% say they are behind schedule. Chris Tucker kind of sums it up. It feels like offensively they're on schedule, but the defense is way ahead of what people expected.
Yeah, we'll revisit that at greater length next week, and we'll have a couple of our friends in the Vols media world join us to kind of evaluate the Tennessee program under Heupel at their bye week, because I think it's pretty interesting to see how they may find themselves. They may ultimately end up with 6 wins, right, which is where everybody was projecting them, and I don't know. ESPN doesn't release the metrics, how they come up with the football power index. It's just that's a preseason measurement that we use without any other context. But I think if you're a Vols fan, you got to be pleasantly surprised with where everything is right now. You're probably a little disappointed this week because you didn't beat Lane Kiffin. But outside of that, like, would you have thought you had a shot against Ole Miss prior to the last 2 weeks leading up into that? Of course not.
Should the Titans trade Josh Reynolds? 1,500 votes, 75% say yes. At Colin Russell on Twitter, whose Twitter name is Fire Todd Downing, says, for what, a bag of Doritos?
Yeah, you gotta have somebody willing to, take Josh Reynolds. And it's curious to see the fact that he's been a healthy scratch. He doesn't have that value on special teams that they need to make him active on game day. He doesn't outweigh. Now, maybe we'll see if this changes without Cam Batson available to them, because Batson is somebody who they've used as a returner, obviously. But if that job goes to Mason Kinsey over Josh Reynolds, you're gonna have a hard time getting somebody to take him off your hands. Now, it may not matter because he's on a one-year deal. You're not paying him a lot of money, so maybe you're just content to let him exist there. But if I'm Josh Reynolds, I want the hell out of here.
Last one of the day. Does Mike Vrabel want every game to come down to fourth and short?
Yes. That is the answer to the question. Mike Vrabel wishes that every game would come down to fourth and short and a goal line stop. That's how the Titans head coach chooses to exist. We'll do it again tomorrow. We'll have Coach Dave McGinnis. We'll have King John Reed. We'll talk about the Vols ahead of Alabama. And, of course, preview the Titans and the Chiefs. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. There's great content available for you in your favorite podcast app. Check out the Install with Greg Cosell after you've listened to 104.5 The Zone all day long, starting in just a few seconds from now, because Blaine and Mickey are up next.